Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Are you on?
I am on and I'm recording.
Are you on drugs?
I wish.
I mean, kind of you are.
Aren't we? Isn't existence just a drug?
Welcome back to the official Geek Speak podcast. I'm your host, Sean, and joined as always is my Josh. Wait, what?
restart. You cut out as you were giving your intro.
Wonderful. Welcome back to the official Geek Speak podcast. I'm your host, Sean, and joined as always is my co-host, Josh, not sick like me, Rudy Rudolph. This is a podcast where we watch movies, make movies, play games, and more. What else can you ask for? Woo!
Woo!
Every episode, usually, we go through a different Disney Channel original movie, or DCOM for short, and we'll see quality changes, etc., from the biggest media company on Earth, catering towards totally children, large sample size, yada, yada, yada. Y'all have heard it in every other 45 episodes. But if you're new to the podcast, sorry, I skipped past it.
They'll need to know things.
This is a show where we are taking a journey through pop culture, and we're both fun, nerdy people, also filmmakers, and today is our year in review based on last year. We try to do it at the end of January, or off by about 4 days, 3 days, so our apologies.
Sorry, not sorry.
It just gives us a chance to catch up on, because, you know, a lot happens in December still usually, so help us catch up on what we missed, some things. And I did catch up on some things, which was good. Josh, we have news and then our main topic, which is our year in review, followed by nothing. We don't have a super weird story today. Just a lot of news and a lot of weird story stuff about, you know, years reviewing.
Oh goody. This makes my job as editor easier.
I know. I made your life lovelier.
You cut out again for a sec.
Why am I cutting out for
you? I don't know. This has never happened.
This will be a fun edit for you then. Okay. Sad news.
Oh, goody.
Beloved actor Carl Weathers passed away this past week. And that is not a happy thing.
That's a very, very sad thing. I first saw him in, yeah, I think it was Rocky was the first thing I saw him in. And yeah.
As great, Apollo, right?
Yep. Great actor. Very, very sad that he's passed.
Also, I apologize if you hear beeping a bit distant sometimes. One of our neighbors has a low battery smoke detector. So it has been chirping for a day. They're not changing it. So I apologize. Yes, Carl Weathers, I have seen him only in one thing, two things technically ever. Toy Story 4 as Combat Carl.
Nice.
And Happy Gilmore as Chubbs.
Perfect.
I guess I might have seen him in the regular show. I saw him in Arrested Development for one episode as himself.
He was great in that.
And Psych as one episode as Floyd Boone. Psych is great.
I most recently have seen him in The Mandalorian. He was great in that. This just sucks.
That's sad. It's always hard to transition from a death to something else in this show. So Oscar nominations. Just not going to do it. We're not going to transition.
All right.
The nominations happened when we recorded last, but I figured it'd be better to have those for our year in review since it's more fitting for this topic.
True.
There's a lot of interesting things happening here and a lot of discussions to be had because, you know, every year it's the same thing of, but why weren't they not nominated? I'm like,
This was a really good year for movies. So I can understand the frustration, but also as a whole, I think most things that got nominated were well-deserved. Most things. There are some that were questionable.
Here are some first-time Oscar nominees for acting, first time ever, which is surprising to me. Emily Blunt's first nomination.
Really?
Uh, Yep. Oh. Sandra Hüller. I don't know who that is. Who did she play this year?
She was in Anatomy of a Fall. She was fantastic.
I'm watching that this week, so I'm excited to see it.
Very good.
Jeffrey Wright's first nomination.
He was great in American Fiction.
I'm watching that tomorrow, nice. Actually. I'm watching that as well as I'm doing double feature tomorrow of that and I think Argyle. So I know you have thoughts on Argyle. We'll get to it. Jeffrey Wright. Lily Gladstone, which is a first also Native American nominee for Best Actress. So that's amazing. And I agree with her statement of saying, why am I the first? That's her response. Yes. That's also a good thing we should talk about at some point as well as like larger discussion. Maybe have more Native people be in mainstream acting roles.
Yeah.
Just a thought. Cillian Murphy, his first nomination as well.
Nice.
Which, again, surprised me as his first. But it kind of makes sense. He's often playing more side characters.
Yeah, and, like, his biggest thing I want to say recently in the main role has been Peaky Blinders. So, yeah, he's been kind of busy with that.
Not an Oscar contender. Danielle Brooks for her first nomination.
Nice.
Is that for Color Purple?
Yes.
Yes, okay. America Ferrera for Barbie.
All right.
And that was a good nomination as well. I think it's a good role that she did. Sterling K. Brown's first nomination.
Woo!
Coleman Domingo's first nomination.
Woo!
And Devin Joy Randolph's first nomination.
Woo!
So overall, I'm happy for everyone. Like, let's talk about Barbie for 1 second. Everyone's going to address that. Just for 1 second. I think the discussion of snubbing for Barbie is a little funny. Because didn't they get like 8 nominations?
They have a Best Picture nomination, and Margot is in that because she produced the movie, and Greta has a nomination for screenplay for it as well. I get the frustration, but you look at all the like Best Actress nominees, like they're all well deserving. Again, this is the problem. This was a very good year for movies. But I'm also someone that doesn't think that Barbie is Margot's best role or best performance. It's not
Babylon.
Yes, Babylon. Incredible. It's not that Barbie was bad in any way, shape, or form. I just think that the actresses that got nominated are a little bit more deserving.
Also, like, I think people are hyping up Margot Robbie's performance so much, but ignoring America Ferrera's nomination at the same time. And that's kind of bothering me. Everyone is also saying, like, Ryan Gosling, Ken got nominated over Barbie. It's like, no, he didn't. They're different categories. He couldn't possibly get nominated over Barbie. It's literally not possible. And I'm glad he was nominated because I think he did a good job.
What I love about the supporting actor category this year is how so many of them are for comedic performances. 3 out of 5 of them were for comedies. And I think that's cool. Like, I feel like comedies really just get the short end of the stick at the Oscars. So it's nice to see that they have, like, decent representation this year.
So far, with the movies I've seen, for Best Picture, I'm rooting for probably... I haven't seen, like, half of these. I'm rooting for Barbie right now. So
I have no idea which of them I want, because I've seen them all now. This is, like, the first time I've ever seen all of them. They're all fantastic. I honestly... It's just going to come down to a matter of personal preference, because I could see any of them winning.
I've seen 4 out of 10 so far. I'm seeing American Fiction tomorrow. I'm going to see Maestro this week as well on Netflix and stuff, so I'll catch up pretty fast.
I guess my answer would maybe be between Oppenheimer and Killers. I honestly don't know, because, I love them all. They're all great.
And for Best Actor, I've only seen Cillian Murphy and Paul Giamatti so far in this list. So
I still need to see Rustin. This is a tough one. I don't know. I'm going to say Paul Giamatti. I want him to swoop in and steal it. I think that'd be amazing.
Didn't Colin Domingo also play Mister in Color Purple?
Yes, he did. He was great in that as well.
Best Actress, honestly, again, I've not seen these categories really, but Emma Stone was great. That's only one of these I've seen so far. I'm overall excited to see, because these movies overall, I hear great things. I don't know. I've seen like half the nominations total, and it's like, I need to catch up.
Yeah, like Best International Films, I've only seen one of them. I still need to see the other ones. And I think Animated Films, I still need to see Robot Dreams. Oh, that's the only one I still need to see.
I will say, I am really happy with Animated Feature List, and that Wish is not in it.
Oh, me too. I'm very happy Wish did not get nominated. And I just love that Nimona, the movie that Disney passed on because, you know, it didn't fit the brand, has an Oscar nomination now, which is the best middle finger that ever could have happened to them.
And it's a very gay movie.
It is very gay, and it's delightful.
Overall, nominations, sure. I wish that we had nominations for Iron Claw. That's what I want right now.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of snubs this year that, you know, should have been nominated. But again, so many good movies this year.
Yes. I'm also really upset there's no nominations for Priscilla or Saltburn for Best Director. So I think even if you look at films or not, the direction of those movies were phenomenal. But yeah, alas, we move on.
We are only allowed to have one woman director nominated each year, and even that's not allowed.
Apparently. So speaking of Oscar, you know, high caliber people in film world, Martin Scorsese.
Oh, that guy?
Yeah. He says he does not see his own movies in public. Does that surprise you?
No.
Do you know the reason why?
Lay it on me.
He said, and I quote, "I'm short, and there's always a big person in front of me."
You know what? That's a real problem. I get it.
But look, that why you're just he's addressing that as why he doesn't see his own movies. Not like he doesn't go see movies in general. That's odd. Anyway, I give this news piece a yay. That's funny and relatable.
I'll give it a yay. I like how you say that's relatable. Like we're not two very tall people.
I'm saying to the masses, Josh.
That's
true. It's relatable to my mom. Yeah, you recently watched Argyle.
I did.
I haven't seen it. You said it was about 5 out of 10, right?
It's a very mixed bag. It's the best way I could describe it is if someone went to like kind of a lesser filmmaker and told them to make like a PG-13 Matthew Vaughn movie, and this is the best that they could do. It's very strange. I don't hate, like, there's a lot of stuff that I like, but then there's a lot of stuff that's just, I don't know, the pacing is the worst thing about it. It's a little over 2 hours 15 minutes. It feels so much longer than that. It bothers me. The action, it's a very mixed bag. Again, I don't know what's happened to Matthew Vaughn over the last few years, but he just, I don't know what's happened. I want the director of the first Kingsman back in First Class, not whatever has happened to him now. And again, I think a big problem with the Kingsman and this is that his frequent collaborator, Jane Goldman, did not write it, and it's very noticeable. It's a okay movie. There's stuff I like. There's stuff I don't. The cast definitely saves it. Sam Rockwell, God among men.
Maybe it'll be our discussion next week. We'll find out what happens. Well, I have Matthew Vaughn news. Speaking of Kingsman, he says he knows how Kingsman 3 will start and how it'll end. He has not figured out what to do in the middle yet, which honestly, as a writer, is very relatable.
Yeah, I get that. It's a struggle.
I get that. Yeah, he's honest and I appreciate it.
Yeah.
More Matthew Vaughn news past that point. You like Damien Chazelle, speaking of Babylon earlier.
He's great.
Matthew Vaughn will direct a musical written by Damien Chazelle. I'm confused, but on board. I know you're like, why can't Damien do it?
I would prefer if Damien would do it, but if like we get the Matthew Vaughn of like past films directing this, like I think he has a very cool visual eye that could be pretty neat for a musical.
I think that Matthew Vaughn's style overall could work for a musical really, really well. And I think if like one thing I like about Chazelle often is also his writing. So I think I could like he lends itself to these big over the top kind of grander stories. I think those two combining could be a good team. Also, he might be like, hey, I can't get these things with good scripts off the ground. Give me a script, please. I trust you. So, you know what? I'd give it a yay as well. Yay, because silly people comboing together.
I guess I'll give it a yay.
Josh, what do you think about the Thunderbolts movie?
I don't know what to think of it, because it's been in development 4 years now.
Well, they were shooting it, and it stopped because of strikes.
True.
So, who knows? We have casting changes, despite, again, they were shooting it. Lewis Pullman, who most recently was in Top Gun Maverick, as the guy with glasses. That was his, I don't know his character name, but that's who he was.
Bob.
He is, Bob's his name?
Yes.
Why do you know that?
Because I love Top Gun Maverick.
I've seen it one time, I thought it was fine.
I watched it in the hospital recently when I got my appendix taken out. It was great.
That's some tea time with Josh. Lewis Pullman is the top choice to play Sentry in Thunderbolts, replacing Steven Yeun.
Cool. Sure.
To me, Steven Yeun was great, and I liked changing it a bit. It was fun. But sure, why not? I'm excited to see how much he beefs up the role, because he's basically playing a version of a Marvel Superman character. So, sure, be big.
I was just going to say, I'm down. He's great in Top Gun. I first saw him in Bad Times at the El Royale. He was great in that. I'm down for it.
Io Adebri will no longer star in Thunderbolts due to scheduling conflicts, and Geraldine Viswanathan will replace her.
I'm sad.
I bet she's like, I want an Emmy. I want a bigger pay now.
It's probably that, and I think now, and I hope that if she does get into like a Marvel or DC movie, it's actually like in a big role and not like a side role than like what was planned for her in this.
Yeah, I think she's really good from what I've seen her in. I think she's very funny, so I'm excited to see what she can do with, you know, more prominent roles. I loved her in Theater Camp. I loved her in Bottoms.
Theater Camp, Bottoms, The Bear. She's amazing. One of my favorite actors working today.
Abbott Elementary.
Yeah.
The replacement for Missy in Big Mouth. She had a lot of very. She's an intro. We'll get to all that stuff soon. But she was very fun, and I'm excited to see more of her career going forward. I give this news piece a yay because, I'm holding up for something better for her for Marvel or DC.
I'll give it a yay. I like Geraldine. I've really liked her since Breakers when that Blockers when that came out. I think she's really funny. I think she could do good.
It's also me saying holding up for something better. It's not an insult to Geraldine. I'm just thinking it'd be cool to see what AO can do in the future. Also, I've only seen Geraldine in one thing, and that's the movie The Package. I've seen that movie.
You've also seen Blockers.
No, I haven't.
I thought you have.
No.
Oh.
That's why I'm saying I'm looking at her filmography, sir.
Oh.
I know, crazy. Cool. Moving past onto Millie Alcock is now playing our Supergirl in the DCU. Most known now for House of the Dragon. Cool. I've seen her in, I think, nothing.
I have seen her in House of the Dragon, and she is great.
Most younger actors, it's harder to see their past stuff because they're still starting out with stuff. So, and she started acting like 2014. So, and she's done like a few things in 2018 and then a few things in like 2020, and that's pretty much how it's been. So I'm excited to see how this goes. James Gunn seems really excited about it. He watched her in House of the Dragon and is like, see that both the like that kindness and that edge in her character that they're looking for. So that's cool. Is she good in that show?
Yeah, she's really good. She definitely has those characteristics that I've heard, because I heard someone say that the way they're adapting Supergirl is from, I think, like, the New 52, like, that kind of era of it, and not, like, how the Supergirl show was, where it was kind of like a gender-bent Superman, and that's what I've heard. Obviously, I have no idea that's how it's going to be, but, yeah, if that's how it is, she definitely has those qualities in House of the Dragon.
I have your favorite thing of all time, Josh. Ready for it?
Maybe.
You're aware that Universal is making a new park.
Yes.
Are you aware of this?
Yes.
The Epic Universe, is what they're calling it. It's going to have four or five parks in it, with the Wizarding World of Harry Potter, and called Ministry of Magic, they're calling the area. There's an area called Celestial Park, Super Nintendo World, Harry Potter and the Dragon, Isle of Berk, and the return of something that's very shocking, the Dark Universe Universal Monster stuff.
I knew they would never let it die. It's back, baby!
And it includes concept art and stuff from what they were potentially planning to do for the movies. I love that they're doing this. That one photo it haunts me.
When the Dark Universe first got announced and like they had fully cast and everything, I was just like, well, that's neat. And then nothing ever happened after the first Mummy movie.
I think a picture of that picture is now a picture of the picture with, of course, that cast photo of the whole universe they did setting it up, and nothing came of it. Javier Bardem, Johnny Depp, Tom Cruise. Like, this is a cast that you wasted.
Oh, yeah, 100%. But also, like, who asked for an interconnected monster movie universe?
I'm curious. Like, I'd watch it.
What would it have led to, though? That's the thing.
But in that main cast photo, why is the only one not in a suit Tom Cruise? He's just in a t-shirt and jeans.
Because he's cool. Duh.
So how do you feel about the return of the Dark Universe in any form?
I fully believe they did that just for the meme of it all, that they didn't have any intention of actually calling it that, but then everyone's just like, yo, I miss the Dark Universe so much, and they're like, alright, fuck it, let's just call it the Dark Universe then.
Yay.
Very big yay, very excited.
Actually, no, nay, because we'll not be in California anymore, we'll be in Florida.
Well, I'm on the East Coast, so I'm gonna give it a yay.
Bully for you. We have something else, Josh, that you're excited about is happening.
What am I excited for?
The Last of Us.
This is true.
The Last of Us Part 3 has been confirmed by Neil Druckmann, and quoting saying, it does feel like there's probably one more chapter to this story. How do you feel about that as a player of the games? Is that good?
I'm the kind of person that is like, if we never got a part three, I would be satisfied. But that we're basically confirmed getting one, I'm like, all right, let's see what you got. Let's see where you can take the story from here.
I have not played part two or part one, so I'm indifferent to this. But cool, you get to play more games.
Yeah.
It excites you?
Oh, very much so.
Does it excite you as much as the Dark Universe in a park? I mean, I don't know, man.
That's a Dark Universe. The Dark Universe is the Dark Universe.
That's the number one thing of all time. It's the best thing.
Oh, of course.
Junkie XL will return to compose a score for Sonic 3.
Nice.
Also, they have a new logo with a kind of a Shadow and Sonic look. Have you seen the logo?
Yes. If Shadow doesn't have a gun, then what's even the point of doing this?
What are you talking about?
Have you not? The video game Shadow the Hedgehog, he uses guns.
Oh my god, I don't play the game in like in a long time. Okay. I played the game a little bit like 15 years ago. So, I don't remember that.
I never played it as a kid. I will never forget seeing the box art and seeing a Sonic game where a Sonic-like character has a gun.
But I also have Sonic movie news, more about it, with Jim Carrey's returning as Robotnik in Sonic 3, officially.
Thank god.
He did announce his retirement prior to this, but now I guess he's probably contracted to do this again. So he's coming back for it.
Or maybe he just loves playing Robotnik so much.
He might. It's a fun role, I'm sure.
You can tell how much he loves it, because he hasn't gotten to do like a very zany role like this in a very long time.
Yeah, I like it. Also, Kristen Ritter has been cast in Sonic 3. I'm hoping as Rouge the Bat.
Sure. I don't know much Sonic characters, but that'd be neat.
Some people think she'll be Amy, but I think she's too like edgy for Amy based on her previous roles. Like, we're going off of typecasting here.
Okay.
Do you know anything about Sonic lore, Josh?
I know very little. I know that Amy's the pink one.
You're not wrong. She has a giant hammer.
Cool.
Okay. If I tell you a character, tell me if they're real or not. Okay?
Okay. Here's the thing.
We got Cream the Rabbit.
No.
That's real.
Oh my god.
George the Squirrel.
No.
Correct, that's not right. Blaze the Cat.
Yes.
Yes. Ray the Flying Squirrel.
No.
No, that's real. There's a lot of very odd things in Sonic lore, Josh. But I feel like they're going to go with a much more classic route since they had Knuckles, Tails, Sonic. They're probably going to add Rouge, Amy, and maybe like a Chao. Maybe, is what I'm thinking about at this point. Because they have Shadow. Overall, fun. I can't believe we're getting a Sonic trilogy at this point. That's what's bizarre to me.
Crazy. I love it.
It'll beat the Dark Knight trilogy for sure.
Of course.
But speaking of Sonic and Sonic games, did you watch the trailer for Sonic X Shadow Generations?
I did. I have actually never played much Sonic games like at all. I think the only one that I ever played a decent amount of was Sonic Unleashed, the one where he turns into a werehog.
Why is that the one you played?
Because it was a werehog. What do you mean? Why would you not want to play it?
That's a weird game, bud.
I'm aware.
This game looks fun. It looks like it's just like a combination of other games.
I think it's like a pseudo-sequel to Sonic Generations that came out like a decade or so ago.
Okay, because it has like... I've watched the trailer. There's clips from like Sonic Adventure 2 pretty much in this. There's clips from like original Sonic for like Game Boy and stuff on here, right? So there's definitely... It's interesting.
I think that might be what they're doing, because I haven't played Generations, but I think it's supposed to be like a callback to that era of like Sonic
previous games.
Yeah. While, you know, doing its own thing.
I think you need to play Sonic Adventure 2, Josh.
Look, there's a lot of Sonic games I need to play.
It's very fun. It opens with you with the FBI chasing you down.
As one does.
And you're flung out of a helicopter from the sky, landing a skateboard in the street, surfing down the highway. In San Francisco.
I see no other way a Sonic game should start.
It's really fun, and it's a great song, and you fight robots along the way.
Cool.
Also, you take care of little flower things called Chows in their own little paradise islands. It's kind of like the Garden of Eden.
Alright.
Yeah, but this trailer looks fun. I give it a yay.
I'll give it a yay.
Also, all of the Sonic news so far is a yay to me. Jim Carrey coming back is great. Chris Ramirez coming back or being introduced. Awesome. I hope she's Rouge the Bat, who's like an edgy, kind of goth character. Because bats, you know. Also, Rouge the Bat was designed to be, like, a sexy character with boobs, because why the fuck do we need to have... You know, every girl needs to have boobs in cartoons, I guess, for some reason.
Of course.
Can you explain why that actually is a thing in character design? I don't understand.
Look, I don't know. The internet didn't...
It's for the furries.
Did furries exist back when Sonic was out, or were furries, like, a more recent thing?
I mean, Sonic is like legitimately probably one of the highest things that furries like. I don't know.
I don't know a goddamn thing about the furry community, and I would prefer for it to stay that way. If you're into that, go you do you, buddy. I don't need to know.
I'll say this: if you search the word "Sonic the Hedgehog Rouge the Bat" on Google Images, it has to have safe search blurring on, like the notification saying blurring is on for safe search in case you find across anything bad. Because, like, I don't know if you know the internet. Like, if you search Sonic X Shadow, you'll probably find not great things. They probably should title us differently.
Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah! The internet's a scary place, and they love Sonic. Like, Sonic fandom is insane. There's an ice cream truck outside, and they've been outside my apartment now for about 5 minutes straight. So I apologize for any music about here. Josh!
What?
Monkey Man. Did you watch the trailer for Monkey Man?
Yes, I did.
Dev Patel. That's our Prince Zuko from the last Airbender movie.
Look, I'm happy that he's really actually getting to do something in a mainstream movie.
Wasn't he in the Green Knight?
Okay, Green Knight, though, I don't know if I would call that. Not mainstream. That. It's not really mainstream. They gave it a wide release, but they didn't do a damn thing for marketing for it.
I think I've only ever seen him in The Last Airbender and Lion.
Yeah, he's fantastic actor. You need to watch Green Knight soon. But this, my god, this looks awesome.
And I actually like, I know I don't like The Last Airbender movie, but he's one of the better actors in it.
Very true.
Okay. This trailer, though, looks really cool.
The fact this is his first movie as director, and it looks this cool, I'm very excited.
I'm impressed. It's action-packed, it looks really fun, I love the coloring and the lighting design, I'm down for it.
Yes, very much so. And, yeah, this just looks, this looks amazing, and this was supposed to be a Netflix movie. Netflix bought the rights to it, and then Jordan Peele, like, actually saw the movie, and he's just like, no, I'm going to put this in theaters. Here's $30 million. We're putting this in theaters.
So yay or nay on this trailer?
Oh, hard yay. Very much so.
I'm so down for it. I like it. Gives me John Wick vibes. But like to me, it has more character and interesting things in it than John Wick gave me. So I'm down for this.
I'm very excited.
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. This trailer seemed like a Matthew Vaughn movie.
It's funny that like Guy Ritchie, I would say, has been, like, decently stylized for most of his films, but this definitely gives off the vibes of a Matthew Vaughn movie more than most of Guy Ritchie's other films have.
Yes. I like Guy Ritchie, I think. Like, I think he does some good stuff.
Yeah, I think Aladdin, from all his films I've seen, is the only, like, big misstep. That one just doesn't feel like a movie he made, but, like, this...
Yeah, gems!
Oh, Lord. But this one I'm genuinely excited for it. I love the premise of it. I love that Henry Cavill gets to do something other than be the stoic cool guy. Like he gets to have more of a personality here. And don't get me wrong, I like him being the stoic cool guy. He's great at it. But here just to see him like actually like laugh is great. I love it.
He sticks his tongue out of this movie trailer.
It's great.
It's fun. He's a goofy man. We get to have the Superman mustache we never really got in the movie Justice League. We get Cary Elwes in this movie. I think it's shot and like edited really well. The editing, though, again, it's very much like Kingsman to me. That's why I'm like, this is the vibe I got. Mm-hmm. This feels like this is like the Kingsman 2 against Hitler.
You know what? You're not wrong.
But no, this looks really fun. I'm excited for it. I like Guy Ritchie. I like the cast. I like the direction this is going. The color grading is pretty like typical teal orange, you know, whatever. Look overall, looks like a fun, generically interesting action movie.
I'm excited.
Yeah, I'll watch it. Henry Cavill gets to have, you know, smile for once. So I'm down for that. Also, Despicable Me 4 trailer.
What am I supposed to say?
Have you seen them all?
Yeah.
I've seen number one and half of number two and one scene of Minions.
You see, the thing with the first two Despicable Me movies is that they found a good balance between actually having a decent story and, like, the Minions stuff. And then you get to Minions movie one, that's just insane the whole time. And, like, there's a part of me that really likes it, and then a part of me that's just like, this has no direction. Then Despicable Me 3 happens, that just had no direction. I don't remember a goddamn thing from it. And then Minions 2 found the perfect balance of insanity and me, like, semi-caring about the story. It's insane through and through, but I had a blast with it. This looks like we're back onto the exact same route that the Despicable Me 3 was. I don't care.
I actually didn't watch the trailer because I've not seen number three.
It's
or half of number two.
It doesn't matter. This just looks like another one of these. It's gonna do well at the box office just because Minions, but like you can tell that they're just like, We just, fuck it, who cares?
And this segment was Disgruntled Josh, once again.
Yep.
The Ghostbusters Frozen Empire trailer. I'm going to say what I said last time. They forget it's a comedy.
I think more so this one, it feels more Ghostbusters-y than the first trailer did.
That's true. But, like, overall, I guess that is true. We do have Paul Rudd saying how much he loves busting ghosts, and he loves busting.
Yes. I would like to correct a mistake. I'm pretty sure on this podcast, I've said before, Jason Reitman is directing this. That was incorrect. I misremembered. This is from the director of Monster House. Jason Reitman, I think, is producing it. He may have co-written it, but the director of Monster House is making this one.
I like that it's not, same thing I said last time, I like that it's not the, you know, the key holder and the lock, or, you know, it's not Zava, it's, what's the name? The Ghoul, Zool, that's what it is. It's not Zool, again, and Keymaster, or whatever. That's been done twice now. I'm done with that. I'm glad it's something new. I like this group of people. I like that it's all cold and icy. That seems fun. It does have more jokes than last time, but I think people keep forgetting why Ghostbusters 1 worked was because it was a random schlocky B-movie comedy.
It is so much like, yes, the ghosts are there, but it's literally just a vehicle for its three leads until, what's his name? Ernie Hudson.
Yeah.
Yes. What, until he shows up, and it's just the four of them just, like, riffing off of each other. That's all it is. And now it's gotten to the point of, like, where the last one got to, like, tell a, like, really good story, and this one, it has an identity crisis.
Bring back silly schlocky B-movie version, please.
Please.
It looks fun, though. I think it's a nay. I like it, but I'm still giving it a nay, because it just, the vibe doesn't match the original. I think it should feel like that again. But I don't know.
I'll give it a yay. I like the design of the main ghost villain. I think that this cast is good. I'll give it a yay for now.
Adaptations, Josh. We have news about those.
Oh, boy.
First off, The Percy Jackson and the Olympians season one ended based on the Lightning Thief book. You finish it?
I still have not caught up.
How far are you?
Episode two.
Josh!
I finished episode two.
I will say, I have a lot of complaints about the show, actually. I think as an accuracy version, I guess it's technically speaking more accurate than the movie is. I think the best adaptation of the story so far is the musical, which is bizarre to say. It, to me, it's paced horribly.
Interesting.
And, like, it's a lot of exposition dumping. It's like every episode is just, like, people just being told things. That's the whole story. That's the whole show. And I think it needs to do a lot more with, like, I hope next season they get, instead of 20 episodes, I hope we get, like, 45-minute episodes. And instead of, like, 8, give us, like, 10. Let us actually breathe and feel things and have moments of character more, I think. Let them be funnier.
I just personally don't understand, and we talked about this in the last episode, why so many streaming shows seem so hell-bent on giving as few episodes as possible. Like, this is a show that, at minimum, should have been, like, 13 episodes.
Yes, it absolutely should. You could, I am fine having them be 20 episodes, because you know how, you know, want to relate to younger audiences with attention span or whatever, but then make more episodes because you're cutting out a lot of actual, like, core character stuff you could have. But whatever, it's fine. The last episode is the best episode. Cool. Also, rest in peace, Lance Reddick, who played Zeus. You haven't even seen it, but the finale of the show, like, or the season is like, says in loving memory of Lance Reddick.
Aww.
So it's good overall, I think, but it's just like it needs some rewriting and reworking for next season, which has not actually been picked up yet for season two. They're working on writing still, though. I'm actually kind of surprised it didn't get picked up immediately for season two. Like, really shocking, because everyone I know has been talking about it still, but whatever. Bob the Builder, Josh.
He builds things.
An animated movie is in the works, starring Anthony Ramos.
Alright.
The film follows Roberto, aka Bob, who travels to Puerto Rico for a major construction job and digs deeper into what it means to build. What?
Okay.
What?
Look, Bob, I don't think we need to be thinking about the story of this too much. This is a show designed for preschoolers.
A coming of age story for carpenters.
You're telling me that 4-year-olds don't dream of being carpenters?
I don't know. I don't know, man. This is bizarre. What is, dig deeper into what it means to build is a bizarre idea. But sure. Yay?
Sure, yay.
How to Train Your Dragon.
That's a thing.
Somehow being made into live action with the same director again.
Cool.
And according to people, you know, people.
Ah, yes.
The remake. Yes, go on.
The people. I know them.
Yep. The people. Or this remake, this live action adaptation, whatever you want to call it, will be its own film and its own interpretation. Quoting, it's like, let's not try and just do a play-by-play of that. If anyone wants that, they can rewatch the animated ones. And again, like we said with the Avatar stuff before, I agree with that on principle. How about instead just adapt the book? Because it's wildly different.
The book is wildly different, but I think that with certain remakes, there are certain expectations, and you have to strike the balance of meeting those expectations while trying to do your own thing. So don't do a one-for-one, but also don't do the exact same thing. You have to be able to pick and choose correctly, like, the things to keep and the things to change, which we're about to probably get into, I would imagine.
Well, we have news about the casting, for one thing. We have one thing I think you're going to like, is that Julian Dennison is playing Fish Legs. You might know him from Deadpool 2 or from Hunt for the Wilder People.
Wonderful.
I also don't know the rest of the cast for this. Gabriel Howell as Snotlout, Bronwyn James as Roughnut, and Harry Trevaldwyn as Toughnut.
Cool.
Do you know any of them?
That's a great question. I've not seen these kids in anything.
Besides Julian?
Yeah, besides Julian.
But so far, the main cast to me seems okay overall. This is like, on principle of casting, I'm fine with this based on looks because I don't know they're in before. I don't have the reference for them, but sure.
Yep.
Now we're going to get into other adaptation news. I'm going to get more bogged down in probably.
Don't worry. I too will probably be sharing in these feelings that you are experiencing as well.
So, I like Aang Boy.
Remember how I talked on the podcast many times about how I'm giving this show the benefit of the doubt? I don't think I can do that anymore.
Avatar The Last Airbender is my favorite show of all time. We talked about last episode about how we liked the trailer and how we thought, overall, we'll be tentative, but it's probably good. We'll keep our... We're fine with the remixing, whatever. It's going to be at least okay. We said that repeatedly.
Yes.
Let's focus on the first thing. Albert Kim says a live-action Avatar The Last Airbender series couldn't just appeal to kids, but must appeal to the people who are big fans of Game of Thrones, whilst being true to the DNA of the original series. I think what they meant was just, like, adult audiences, and, like, fantasy lovers, but don't use Game of Thrones specifically as that line.
And also, if you're trying to say to appeal to both kids and adults, just
say
do
that.
But also do what the original show did. Yes, it's a show made for children, but it was also like adult enough to be able to appeal to adults without having to be too quote unquote adult, if that makes sense.
And I would argue that it was not made for kids. It's just where they happened to get the show made. Like they happened to get it for Nickelodeon. So like, okay, it has to cater to those censors. So I think this quote really means we'll have blood and more adult themes actually shown. Like we'll see the bodies more and more of the killings actually will be shown instead of just like implied. And I get that. But you don't. Also, Game of Thrones comes with like also weird sexual stuff involved when you bring that up. So maybe don't say that stuff. I don't know. Nay.
Nay.
Just you could say you can adapt the themes from the show to appeal to everyone. That's all you needed to say with that. Whatever. Next thing I'm going to talk about for a second is about the character of Sokka.
Oh boy.
Which I guess will be just be general spoilers for the whole show Avatar. Skip ahead to our year in review segment because this is our last piece of news if you're not interested or if you've not watched the show. Because there are timestamps down below. Which I know if there are ads in the podcast like on Spotify, it's a little off, but you can just estimate by about a minute. Whatever. So, Netflix live action Avatar series took out how sexist Sokka was in the original, quoting, a lot of moments in the animated show were iffy. Like, yes. Okay, I see both sides of the argument here, actually. Because it... Technically, yes, some things were iffy. And people are saying it's a huge part of his arc. I mean, no. It's like episode 4 of Warriors of Kyoshi is where things start to really change. I will say, it's a precursor to his bigger arc in the show, which is his insecurities.
Yeah.
That's what the sexism part of it comes from him growing up in a patriarchal, isolated society. That's what his arc is about. And expanding his world beliefs. So yes, the lesson of girl can fight, what? Maybe they're not just like useless. It's like that's a weird thing to talk about in 2024, 2025. I get that. But, and I'm not defending or the sexism necessarily. I'm not removing, but like, it made sense for a character. Also, the show wasn't like, see how good this is. The show was saying, hey, we need to move past this. You need to change, like, immediately.
Yeah. Plus, you would also not believe how many kids today still don't, you know, still have these misogynistic, you know, and sexist viewpoints engraved into them and need to, like, hear, like, oh, yes, women are people, too.
And again, I think him learning respect for women because they can be warriors, too, isn't the best message. I get that. Especially because the person he's learning that from eventually will be his love interest, which makes it weirder. A little bit like in a live-action scenario. Also, there are only 8 episodes per season. Things will feel a little rushed, and you might have to cut some things like that. I get it. Again, but I think it's missing the bigger point of it's about how insecure he really is as a person. He doesn't have a mother. He hasn't had a father for most of his life. He had to be literally the biggest, the man of the tribe. He had to be hyper-masculine in kind of a toxic way growing up without any adults there when they went off to war to help the entire tribe and their nation. He had to be the embodiment of what masculinity could be. And without anyone who actually masculine there, he had to just figure out for himself. There's a lot of deep, actual rooted themes in that of a person. Like, that's very multi-layered.
And
bringing it down to they were iffy fundamentally is weird.
It also just it makes me wonder now, then what is his arc going to be? Because if you take those parts of his journey out, then you don't have a complete character. This would be like if somehow, for some reason, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia was getting remade by different people, and they were just like, yeah, the characters weren't good people, and like they said and did bad things, so we're not going to do that anymore. And it by doing that, you completely miss the entire point of it. And here, by taking out this stuff, you're missing and misunderstanding why that stuff was in there to begin with. And it's just so strange for them to make this choice. And it just kind of feels like that it's a reductive, like, viewpoint of how and why this existed in the first place, I guess. It's like they're trying to do good, but in doing so, they're forgetting why it was done in the first place.
Now, he does kind of stop being, like, outwardly sexist in any way by book, by chapter 4, Quarries of Kiyoshi, which is out of 20 episodes in book 1. So, I get it. But again, if the precursor to his bigger journey of, like, removing a lot of the deeper insecurities of himself, removing a lot of the ideas of patriarchy, the ideas of who he is, and humbling himself, that arc finishes in book 3, the episode Sokka's Master, when he's truly humbled for who he is and not trying to boast a big ego anymore. That's what this is about. So the sexism is a precursor to his bigger ego and his bigger themes of that. So I'm fine with removing the sexism part if they actually double down on his insecurities part.
Yeah, and also, like, if they're cutting out his stuff, then what about the one guy from the one water master from the end of book 1?
Master Paku.
Yeah, like, that was such a big thing for that whole episode arc was his sexism and Katara, like, proving to him, like, no, you have been wrong about this.
Well,
like,
on that note, they also removed other things. Certain areas of Katara's character have also been removed, including some gender issues that didn't quite translate from the cartoon. What?
What does this mean?
Because, like, some gender issues. You mean, like, having to constantly prove who she is in a world of masculinity? Also, Sokka... That also plays off the last thing is, Sokka's team becomes surrounded by Katara and Toph, who are the best benders of all time. So, it's wild to me. The gender issues, like, Katara has to be... is taking on an overly... If they remove her, like, motherly side of things, I'll be really confused. Because, again, that goes back to how she's raised in a tribe of, at this point, all women, with her mom being gone. How'd she step up to the role of mother pretty much for everyone around her? So, like, it's just bizarre.
Again, a lot of these choices, and from the way that they talk about it, it sounds like that it was coming from the higher-ups of Netflix, which is starting to become clear why the original creators left. And again, these kind of decisions, they seem to be well-intentioned, but they're not understanding why they were important to the characters to begin with, and seeing that for 2005, like, and especially on a kids show, like, I would say they were pretty advanced, I guess, if that's the best way to put it.
Also, like, you brought up before, Master Paku in the episode The Waterbending Master up in, like, the North Pole and stuff. I love that episode because I think the sexism in that, the idea of like, is fascinating to me because it's an isolated tribe having ways of culture, and she's an outsider challenging their actual cultural beliefs. It's not just, oh, he's sexist guy, women can't do this. It's, no, you're coming into, like, it's like if you walked into, like, it's a wild thing to first want to do, first off. And then prove that you're right is a huge deal. So removing, I don't know. It's a bizarre choice.
It's,
and if they remove Master Paku, like, also, it's not just him. It's the tribe itself. It's they have men are waterbending warriors who waterbend can be warriors, women who waterbend can be healers. That's like the, how their whole Northern Waterbend tribe runs. It's not just Paku. It's like an actual systemic thing. That's what I was talking about before. So, like, yeah. So her challenge of the actual systemic issues is a big point.
Yeah. And when you look at how Shyamalan, you know, did his version of it, obviously a lot of stuff was cut, you know, for
including that.
Yeah, for very obvious reasons. But you also have to look at, like, the narrative formats between movies and shows. They're both very different in how they do things. So the reason...
Also, Shyamalan's was 90 minutes.
Yes. Shyamalan's version is not good. I'm not defending his version, but I'm saying that the choices that he made to cut certain things makes more sense with the format of it. But here, we are a show again. So, like, cutting this stuff doesn't make sense for this format.
And here comes what I think is the biggest offense of all of this, actually. Because, sure, some of the gender issues can be changed, they can be tweaked. Sure, Sokka sexism can be removed, and it's fine because his big arc is about being insecure and needing to be humbled and all this other stuff. The biggest thing to me that's most egregious change I've heard so far is to make Avatar: Last Airbender a serialized drama, Aang will not go on many detours looking for adventures like riding the elephant koi. End quote. We essentially give him this vision of what's going to happen. And he says, I have to go to the Northern Water Tribe to stop this from happening. What?
If you're doing that, then what are we doing for 7 episodes?
Well, I guess, I mean, it still takes a while to get to the North Pole. I get that.
Still, though, if he's not going to go on detours, then why make a bunch of detours then?
Also,
he's a child.
Yes. Fundamentally, Aang is someone who ran away. That's at his core. He doesn't want this responsibility. He doesn't want any of this. Also, giving him a vision saying to go to the North Pole? No! He doesn't need to learn how to waterbend. Why can't that be the same reason here?
So thank you for bringing this up. By giving him a vision, this kind of completely goes against why he ran away in the first place. Now, it's basically just being like, he ran away because he didn't want the responsibility. Then he wakes up, and then he realizes he has a responsibility. He's like, I'm going to go fulfill this responsibility. That completely obliterates the entire point of that entire episode arc and an integral part to his character. This makes no sense.
A lot of people's favorite episode of all book one is called The Storm, which is a parallel mirroring of Zuko's story and Aang's story in their past. And it's so well done. It's my favorite episode of book one as well, probably. And having all of Aang's history of who he is, of being all of a sudden isolated, once he finds out he's the Avatar, being isolated from his friends because just one being told all of a sudden, hey, you're different now. There's just so many layers to all of this. And then, okay, he just found out his childhood was going to be robbed from him completely for the rest of his life, pretty much. Okay, now, in this new version, let's keep his childhood Robin Hood again. What?
The whole point of him going to the Northern Water Tribe is to learn the elements. He doesn't have this greater goal yet of saving the world. He just knows that, you know, he needs to learn these elements. And along the way, he's going to do what kids do and do kid shit.
Well, like, what's funny about this to me is this kind of... they had a thing last week or whatever that said they were going to remove Sozin's Comet from book one. Like, as an idea, it removes the idea of a ticking clock, like, because the kids in Wakabla age in real life.
Which I get that. I understand that. That makes sense.
Right. But that also, I have to get to the Northern Water Tribe right now, feels like also adding a ticking clock for their journey of I have to save the world or whatever. And, at least in this book one, and introducing Susan's comment saying it's coming soon would have done the same thing. Because book one, halfway through, they introduce Sozin's Comet and say, hey, by summer's end, this will come. You have to defeat the Fire Lord by then. You could have just said, hey, and Sozin's Comet's coming soon. We don't know when yet. Or you could have left it vague. And then did the exact same thing to make him go to the Northern Water Tribe faster. You could have stopped, cut his detours over halfway through the season when that happens, like the show does.
again, I think a lot of these problems of like them cutting stuff comes from the fact that it's only 8 episodes. And if they had more, then I think that this could have been fine. Like, again, if it was a minimum 13, they could have kept so much of this stuff in without having to risk changing a lot of stuff. But by making it only 8, they have to cut so much to be able to fit into this new episode format. And the more I'm hearing about it, the more and more worried I'm getting. I don't want it to be bad. I want it to be good. But with these changes they're making, I am very scared now.
Nay, all of this, I just feel like a lot of misunderstandings of these characters to me.
Yeah, it just sounds like that a lot of these choices come from the higher ups of trying to, I don't want to say being progressive, but that is kind of how it comes off. And by doing so, they're not understanding how the original was progressive and what it was doing.
Oh, it was iconic. And I guess like what's funny to me is that the original Avatar show came out now, people would be like, it's too woke.
Oh, for sure.
Which is wild to me, because it's people who call things woke now, like, oh, too woke, whatever, are people who loved the show as a kid also. It's confusing to me. It's great. I love Avatar: The Last Airbender. I think it's the best show of all time. So it's fine making changes. It's fine doing that if you understand the material you're making changes from and respect it.
And it's like the people making it both seem to understand it while also misunderstanding it.
And Josh, that brings us to our main topic today, which is our year in review from last year.
Oh, boy.
And a lot happened last year. We had SAG strike. We had WGA strike, which were definitely a long time of things not coming out as much. Yep. Including this podcast taking a break for a while.
Yep.
Overall, I think it was a pretty good year for media. Now, Josh, this episode focuses now mostly, though, on films and like just the general filmography. There's a few things about TV and a few things about games, but overall, about TV and movies specifically. Are you down for this year in review about last year?
Oh, I always am.
Okay, let's start with our biggest yay from last year. If you're new to the podcast, we have yay and nay, as you've probably gotten this new segment here before. And so yays are just positive things, nays are negative things, obviously, but they can also be arbitrary reasons. I gave something a nay earlier because of something stupid. We can do it anytime we want to. Okay, Josh, the biggest yay movie-wise from last year, what would you give that?
Oh, easily would be Across the Spider-Verse. No contest.
Really?
Yep.
For me, I'm going to go with Barbie.
Understandable.
I think Barbie is phenomenal. I love it. It's probably my favorite movie last year. I have some ones that are also really high. I loved Iron Claw. I loved Godzilla Minus One. A lot of movies that are, you know, fantastic. And so you think Across the Spider-Verse, no doubt?
Oh, Across the Spider-Verse is just incredible through and through. I rewatched it not too long ago, and just everything from its story to its characters, the goddamn incredible animation and everything that they do into it, it feels like an impossible thing to have been able to top the first film, and I think that it did. It's truly an incredible film.
Now, the biggest nay from last year for you.
That's an easy one. Rebel Moon Part 1, A Child of Fire.
Really?
That was, and it feels wrong.
What?
It feels wrong to judge it because this isn't the true version of it.
Director's cut?
And it frustrates me so much. I don't know what the director's cut can fix narrative-wise. I don't think it can fix much, but I know that it can make a more cohesive story. But this PG-13 version Netflix released around Christmas, it's my least favorite Zack Snyder movie. It's not good. The Snyderisms of
worse than Sucker Punch?
Oh, for sure. At least Sucker Punch has good fight scenes and good visuals. This has bad fight scenes and bad visuals. Again, the Snyderisms of it don't work. The characters are the most paper thin he's ever done. It's just hopping from planet to planet that you can't tell any differences of, and going to a person and be like, hey, want to join a team? I can't join a team because I have a dark past. Well, you gotta be good now. Okay, I'll join the team. And then we never hear that character speak again.
Should I watch it?
No.
Okay, cool. My biggest nay of last year was a Netflix original movie called The Tutor, starring Noah Schnapp and Garrett Hedlund, and I watched the whole thing.
I remember you telling me it was not good.
It's like half fine for the first like two-ish quarters, like a half movie, maybe three quarters of the movie. It's, I guess, you know, it happened. I think I gave it 2 stars. I didn't see anything last year I truly hated. But I'm like, this is just not a good vibe. It's just, that's not going anywhere for the whole time. It's like, interesting this mystery. And it's just like, you cheated on my mom or something. Ah, you attacked her. I'm like, okay, Noah, calm down. Also, I don't think the acting of this movie is phenomenal across the board. I don't know if it's a direction thing. So I think whether I like Noah Schnapp or not now, I think it's generally a better actor than he gave in this performance.
Yeah, like season two of Stranger Things, like he did a really good phenomenal job with that.
Yes. So I think he could do better than this. Garrett Hedlund, I mean, he was Hook in Pan. He also was in Tron Legacy. He had a weird career.
I know he's done good things.
Yeah. He's in Aragon, apparently. He's in Triple Frontier. Yeah, I'm sure he's great. He was fine in this. I just am confused by this movie, mostly. Also, like, a tiny part of Saltburn gave me vibes from The Tutor. And if you watch the movie, you know what I mean. I don't know. It's fine. You know what it's about?
Tutor.
A professional tutor, played by Garrett Hedlund, takes a job at a remote manor. He soon finds himself battling his disturbed student's obsessions, which threaten to expose his darkest secrets and unravel his carefully crafted persona.
Cool.
It's fine. Victoria Justice is in it.
Oh.
She's, like, the girlfriend of Garrett Hedlund in it.
Oh. Neat.
Yeah. That's my biggest nay of the year. I guess second biggest nay would probably be Wish, but that's fine.
Second biggest nay for me is The Flash.
Oh, yeah, you watched that.
Sadly.
So let's go. Okay, that brings us to the next ring. A neutral nay. So it's like, I think it's just like pretty much the middle of the road. Could even be a 6 out of 10 for you, but you're going to go with nay anyway. Could be a 4, could be a 5, something in that range. Just like, so it's a pretty neutral movie overall, but just I'm leaning towards a downward slope. What do you give that ranking to today?
If I'm going for a neutral nay, that's a good question.
It might still be a wish for me, actually.
It's, I have three contenders for it. I have Mario, The Last Voyage of the Demeter, and, yeah, Wish. Wish, I think, is the one that, Wish tends to be more nay, like, not neutral. I'm gonna go with Mario on this one.
Ooh, hot take for a lot of people.
It's not a hot take, it's not good, it's very meh! I am tired of people acting like it's good. If you think it's good, watch more movies. I might cut this out. That's very aggressive.
You know Jack Black said he loved it himself?
And I love Jack Black in it. He's not the problem.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. You know what? For your Mario, for your aggressiveness, I give you a plus. I might switch my neutral nay, actually. I might. No, I'll leave it at Wish. It's to me, it's bordering on fine, mostly bad.
Yeah, Wish is just, it's just so generic to the
it's
point
so
of,
unneeded.
It's, you gain nothing from it. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, Nicole, my lovely girlfriend. I know you like it a lot. I'm sorry. I don't.
I don't remember a goddamn thing from it since I've seen it.
And I do because of TikTok. Because that song that Chris Pine sings, it's bad. What is it?
None of the songs are good. I'm sorry. They're just
no,
not.
There's one song I liked. I don't remember what it is now. I guess it didn't stick in my head. Okay, a neutral yay. So, like, that's kind of fine, but again, you can be in 6, 4, 5, but your rating here does not matter. Mostly just what the vibe was like. That was kind of an experience I didn't hate.
A neutral yay. That's a good question.
For me, I might go Haunted Mansion. Like, it's fine. Like, I think Lakeia Stanfield was really fun. You know, Danny DeVito, Rosario Dawson, Owen Wilson. I think that the child being suicidal at the end was very weird. But overall, it's fine.
I'm going to go with Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny.
That's your neutral yay?
It's my neutral yay because of its batshit bonkers third act. I'm not going to give it away, but my God, that saved it for me.
I think the epitome for me of neutral yay this year is Knock at the Cabin.
Really? I really like Knock at the Cabin.
I know you did. It's 100 minutes long, and I get that nothing happens because nothing really can happen because of the plot. But, like, I don't know, man. I'm missing something. I needed something else to happen. Like, I think overall, I came out like, I'm glad I watched that, but not much else.
I mean, that's the case with a lot of Shyamalan stuff. For some people, it's either going to really work for you or it's really not. For this, it worked for me.
No, I'm neutral, Josh. I don't have one way or the other.
Then you're a weird person, then.
Ooh, best movie villain. Who is it this year? We got contenders like, we got Nicolas Cage's Dracula.
What was the category?
Best movie villain.
Oh!
We got, what's his face? We got High Evolutionary for Guardians 3. We've got age gaps from No Hard Feelings. We've got systemic problems in Elemental. We got Little Mermaid. We got, what's her face in it?
Ursula?
You know, yeah, Ursula. We got Jack Black's Bowser from Mario movie. We have Fury of the Gods. They got the bad peoples. That...
We have reviving dead people in The Flash.
We don't got... So you have WB on here. we got Scream 6, Ghostface, or, you know, just Spyglass of this year as the company. Bear from Cocaine Bear.
I think you mean the hero.
Kang from two things, actually. That's not, that's movie villain, so just Quantumania. We got Tom Hanks in Asteroid City. He's the villain, totally. Jared Leto in Haunted Mansion.
All right, I have two answers. If we're going for movie villain, I'm going for Jason Momoa from Fast X. What a delightful performance. I loved it. And then if we're going in general, I'm going with the film studios.
As a whole?
As a whole for the strikes.
What about like Gabe Plotkin from Dumb Money or any of the like, hedge fund boys? I think my best movie villain this year, can I say the dad from Iron Claw? Does that count? It's a real person, so I probably shouldn't.
It's a very complicated answer. I don't think you would be wrong in saying it.
Look, that family curse was just a dad. No, but this best... Actually, no, I'm going to give it to Godzilla from Godzilla Minus One.
Not bad, not bad.
Maybe the Chocolate Cartel, you never know.
I'm sticking with Jason Momoa. I love... God, he was amazing in Fast X.
Not Hugh Grant in D&D.
I'm not saying that he's bad. I'm just saying, like, you...
No, you're right. I'm giving mine to Godzilla, though. Best musical or musical vibes?
Ooh, that's a good question.
We got, like, Leo. We got Wonka. We got Wish.
Dicks.
One scene in the Marvels. Honestly, if you added songs, Poor Things would be like a musical.
It's not a musical, but all right.
No, I said if you added songs, like it has some of the like set design and stuff, gives me musical vibes. Same with Asteroid City, gives just theater vibes in general, because it's like an homage to theater in general. I'm going to give it to Theater Camp. It's not a musical, musical vibes. That's why I added, we didn't have a lot of musicals this year. I'm adding musical vibes as a category part.
I'm going to go with The Color Purple. That was fantastic.
Actually Wonka. Wonka's great.
Yeah.
Wonka's, he's a good drug dealer. It's delightful. What was your most unhinged experience in a movie this year?
Most unhinged?
Yeah, it might be Saltburn to me.
Are we talking about the movie itself?
Interpret how you will, bud. If you want to spill some tea from IRL stuff, we can do that.
Unhinged.
Because we have unhinged experience and then weirdest movie next. So, most unhinged experience. Might also be Dicks the Musical.
I don't know. That is borderline on weird by the end.
I'll give it to Saltburn. No, it's Bottoms in a good way.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with Bottoms on that one. That's unhinged, but in the best possible way.
There are no hinges. There are no doors. There's no walls. It's all just
it's just there.
Yeah, Bottoms is very unhinged. It's so fun. It's delightful. It's very gay, and we love it. But Weirdest Movie for me, there's a lot of weird movies. A lot of weird movies happened. Asteroid City is pretty weird. Renfield's pretty weird.
I have an easy answer. I'm going with Bo is Afraid
above Poor Things or Saltburn.
You see, those are well-made.
Oh, see, we have an Ari Aster hater here.
No, I'm not an Ari Aster hater. I like his stuff. Look,
just watched Midsommar for the first time.
It's good.
It's an experience.
It is. But look, Bo is Afraid is a film I can tell on a technical level is very impressive. And I think that performances from everyone are great. I have no goddamn idea what that man was going for with this movie. If you like it, good for you. I'm happy that you found something to love. By the end of the 3 hours, I was thankful the 3 hours were over.
I'm giving Weirdest Movie of the Year to Dicks the Musical.
That would have been my other choice.
Again, two-thirds, I'm kind of okay with it.
It's literally the last, like, 10 minutes.
kind of almost ruined the entire thing for me. So, Josh, what was the most fun game experience for you this year that you played?
Ooh.
For me, it's going to be Tears of the Kingdom because I didn't play a lot of games this year.
I'm going to go with either the Resident Evil 4 remake or Spider-Man 2.
For me, actually, it'd be Dungeons of Eternity. It's a really fun game for VR, and you play a little bit, but it gets more fun, so keep playing.
Okay.
That's my game of the year. for me, my favorite experience. I don't think the game was fully released this year, but it's my first time playing it. So Josh, this is usually we do top three and top for this category, but I'm gonna say top two because there are fewer this year than ever before. Feels like top three favorite superhero movies.
Top three favorite
superhero movies. Top two.
Oh, top.
Yeah, we're going two.
If we're going top two, then Spider-Verse and Guardians 3.
Okay, what are your top three then? If you would you expand it?
So I'm debating if I wanted to do superheroes or comic books. Because
are you thinking about TMNT?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. I'll keep it as superhero. If I keep it superhero, I'm going to put Blue Beetle as number three.
My top two this year are pretty firmly the Marvels and Blue Beetle, I think.
All right.
Sorry. A Spider-Verse that happened. Okay, fine. Blue Beetle and Spider-Verse.
Interesting. All right.
I mean, like, I like Guardians 3 a lot, but I have a complicated relationship with these movies, as you know.
Yes, I'm aware.
Like, I don't know. Like, I liked it, but I think I firmly like Blue Beetle. Like, there was no, like, caveats as much.
Yeah.
Same with the Marvels. Like, this was just really fun. But yeah, if we're talking about comic book movies in general, TMNT was really fun. I enjoyed it. But Spider-Verse was my number one favorite movie of the year until I saw Barbie, so I had to give it to that. Now, top three favorite non-superhero movies. And just for fun, don't say your biggest DAU you gave earlier.
Well, I can't. My number one was Spider-Verse, so I already...
That's true. Clearly, it's Leo. Okay. For me, I'm going to go with the Iron Claw.
Okay.
Since I'm not going to count my mega biggest EA earlier was definitely Barbie, so I'm going to go with Iron Claw, Godzilla Minus One, and maybe Wonka?
Interesting.
I really liked Wonka, but... There's a lot of fun movies.
I've seen a lot of good movies this year.
I'm going to give it to Theater Camp, I think, on that one.
Okay.
Because someone who's been a theater camp counselor and camper, it's a weird experience watching it like that.
All right, if I'm going to go top three without Spider-Verse, Barbie...
Aquaman 2, I'm kidding.
Barbie, Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning, Part 1. I refuse to leave out the Part 1. And... man, this is tough. I want to say Killers of the Flower Moon, but I'm going to say Bottoms instead.
Also, there's a lot of great movies this year. So I think
a lot of really good movies this year. Like, it's tough.
It is hard. Like, there's a lot of movies out here I love that I just didn't mention. Like, I put Theater Camp in there above Poor Things. I think Poor Things is a better movie. I had more fun watching Theater Camp. I kind of vibe a lot of this. Now, Josh, best horror this year. It might be Scream 6 to me.
The Zone of Interest is not a horror movie, but it's pretty goddamn terrifying. I don't think that's gonna be.
And you can count horror comedy. You can count Renfield and Cocaine Bear and, you know, whatever, Haunted Mansion. They're still horror, just horror light.
FNAF. I'm gonna go with Talk to Me. That was probably my favorite pure horror movie from this year.
Oh, okay. So if you go on Letterboxd and you filter this year, it won't come out, pop up there.
That's why I have a list of my favorite films to make it easier for me.
Yeah, smart. So Talk to Me is really good. That's, I think, really up there. I'm saying FNAF mostly as a joke, because it's not the best horror movie this year. For me, it probably is going to be Scream 6. I like Talk to Me a lot, but I think I had more fun watching Scream 6. Talk to Me had a lot of brutal stuff happen in it.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely not for the squeamish.
I'm not squeamish. I just prefer not to see that all the time. I also didn't go into it expecting a lot of brutal stuff. I don't know why. I definitely should have. But FNAF was just fun. funniest movie experience to you this year?
Bottoms.
That's fair.
That was, if it wasn't Bottoms, then it would probably be Joyride. Now, what am I saying, Barbie? That
it is. So I don't want to give Barbie all the accolades, but also it deserves a lot of them.
It deserves a lot of them. But like Barbie, Bottoms and Joyride are neck and neck with Barbie in terms of comedy. They are all hilarious.
Did you think Anyone But You was pretty funny?
Yeah, I love Anyone But You.
I also thought Dumb Money was pretty funny. I think that for me, it's going to be Bottoms. I love Barbie. I think it's really funny. Asteroid City is also very funny to me.
Yeah, Asteroid City is great.
No Hard Feelings is funny, but it still weirds me out a lot of time. So whatever. I think it's going to go to Bottoms for, I think, probably both of us. But you said Barbie, so I don't know. Now, Josh, best new TV show that you watched this year?
Oh, God damn it. Why did you have to? Fuck.
Last of Us?
Thank you. You made my life a lot easier. I'm going with Last of Us, because that's new.
Okay. Now, how about a show that's just new to you? And I think you watch this year, like, you for the first time that you really, like, for TV wise.
Because
for me, I watched for the first time this year, Jane the Virgin. Nicole showed me it. It was fun.
Okay.
I think I really enjoyed though watching. I finished Ted Lasso, which I also really enjoyed finishing.
I've seen a lot of movies last year. I don't think I've seen that many shows. That's the problem.
It's fine. We can stick with the last house and move on. So what was the best animated feature of last year? Besides Spider-Verse, that's the obvious answer.
Ooh.
Actually, no. No, for you, you might say Boy in the... Have you seen Boy in the Heron?
Mm-hmm.
Is that your answer or no?
I think that's going to be my answer, aside from Spider-Verse.
Is Spider-Verse above it to you?
To me, personally, yes. But you can make a very strong case for why Boy in the Heron is the best one. And I would stand by that. I'm not going to deny that. But for me, personally, I'm going with Spider-Verse.
Last year, I didn't actually watch a ton of anime pages from last year. TMNT Mutant Mayhem is probably my answer.
That's a good one.
It's above Mario for me.
It should be. I'd be concerned if it wasn't.
It's above Wish. I'm going to go with, yeah, TMNT for sure. But also Wish happened.
What about Elemental?
Elemental happened. Leo happened. Yeah, I'm going to go with TMNT, Mutant Mayhem. I think it's fun. Cool. I think that Elemental is good. I think it needed to be a bit more on the nose for some things. But overall, I liked it a lot. Leo was oddly funny. But yeah, TMNT, best anime feature, outside of Spider-Verse, because that's my number one. But you also have seen more movies last year than I did, because I'm still working on it. Josh, what was the coolest costume of last year?
Coolest costume? Ooh.
I might go with Blue Beetle, because it's practical. Like, they actually had that on set.
I think I'm going to have to agree with you on that one. I think Blue Beetle's costume, I think, is, like, the best one of them.
I also want to say, every costume in Renfield's really fun.
Yeah.
I'm looking at a list of the movies again, and just, like, there's some good costumes last year.
Could
I also can't knock Aquaman 2's costume design ever.
That's true. Those are good, too.
It's just so good.
It's
so well made.
Could we say the animatronics in Five Nights at Freddy's because they were people in those suits?
I guess. Are you giving it? Is that the coolest costume to you? What are the FNAF characters?
Nah, I'm still giving it to Blue Beetle. Out?
Yeah, okay. It's Blue Beetle. Yeah, it's Jaime. Now, what was the biggest surprise for you of 2023?
Biggest surprise? Ooh, that's a good question.
It's the same question as the past 2 years, Josh.
Look, I do not remember.
Mine might be Oppenheimer, but in a negative way, I thought I'd like it more. No, it might be Air.
That's a good choice. Good choice.
I didn't think I'd love Air. I really loved Air.
All of January, except for Missing, January of last year had just a
theater camp.
That's good. But January of last year had Megan, Plane, A Man Called Otto, and 80 for Brady. All films that should not have been good, and yet they all were good. I had complete faith in Missing, but I'm going just with January as a whole from last year.
Megan was 2023? That's crazy.
Yep.
I forgot. It wasn't filtering right. That's why I didn't have it on my list. Okay. So Megan might be best horror with me above Scream 6, because it's so stupid.
Oh, okay. I was about to say, what's your reasoning here?
No, okay. So for biggest surprise, you're going with probably Megan, you said?
Biggest surprise is just January in general. So Megan, Plane, A Man Called Otto, and 80 for Brady.
Okay, mine, let's go with, yeah, it's Leo.
Alright.
I didn't expect to like it at all. I thought it was going to be completely, like one star terrible. And I gave it 3 stars. I never thought that I'd see a Turtle with a Tramp stamp, voiced by Bill Burr.
I love the fact that you keep clinging on to about this movie.
Look, it's so weird to me. I never thought I'd see a fucking iguana or whatever singing a song to a child saying, "Don't cry, you look like a weirdo." Like, it actually made me laugh. There are kindergartners who look like little demon trolls. It's funny. That's why I'm surprised. I don't think it's amazing, but I was surprised by it. And I guess I can go in a negative way with this, too. I really was hoping Mario will be better. You don't have to be negative. I just think about that.
I think I'm going to go with Napoleon for that. Or, no, I'm going with Last Voyage of the Demeter on that one. That was such a cool premise, and I just feel like it was very wasted.
Is there any movie you wish you had a chance to see in theaters that you didn't?
That's a good question.
Could be something you saw on streaming, or it could be something that you just missed out on, or whatever.
Okay,
I still can't believe you watched Thanksgiving.
That was a very fun film. I really liked it.
And Saw X.
I surprisingly liked it, even though I don't want to see it again.
For me, it's probably Boy and the Heron.
Yep, That's a good choice. I am going to go with the Hulu movie, No One Will Save You. I wish I got to see that in the theater.
I also wish I got to see it in theaters, Bo is Afraid. I think I would have liked it.
I genuinely have no idea if you would have or not.
So I thought Midsommar was fine. Like, I thought, okay, Midsommar, I thought it was a movie that is technically phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't for me.
I can understand that.
Like, I understand the love for it. I understand everything about it. It's like, okay, it just didn't do anything for me. I appreciate it a lot. I get all the appeal. Not my vibe. So, Josh, lastly, for this category, anything you watched in 2023 for the first time that didn't release, like this, didn't release in 2023 that you loved? Like, anything from 2022, 2021, 1980, anything beforehand that you, you finally watched?
Oh, God, that's going to take me a hot minute.
You can pick one thing, Josh.
God, why? I'm going to go with James Cameron's The Abyss.
I might go with The Nice Guys, which you showed me on your birthday.
Yes!
That's a very fun movie. Actually, I'm going to give a random answer to this, Josh.
Okay.
I don't think you're ready for it.
I'm never ready for anything.
Let's go with it. Let's go with Super Mario Brothers from 1993. I loved it. I don't think it's good, but I loved it.
You know what? I respect the answer. I respect it.
We watched this podcast. It did not come out this year, but I loved it. Also, technically, I can say The Fablemans, because I watched it this past January, last year.
Yeah, that's
the first time. And I caught up on something from 2022. Fablemans is amazing. But I feel like that gets in the spirit of the answer.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Either Mario, or technically I watched it this year. I was going to say Stand By Me for the first time. But it's a good movie. Oh, also Mrs. Doubtfire. I watched it for the first time in last December. It's fun.
That's what I've heard.
So, Josh, that was our year review for the most part. Now, last thing before I end the show is, what are your most anticipated movies and things in general looking forward to 2024? Now, we are now in February, so we've already seen... So, Beekeeper's already come out. I don't know if you've seen that. Argyle is coming out. Miller's Girl just came out. So, a few things have come out now. But overall, looking forward for the rest of the year, what is your most anticipated things?
That's a good question, because everything keeps getting release dates changed.
That's true. Like, The Bike Riders keeps changing.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That was supposed to come out. God damn it. I guess
if we'd recorded this last December, I would have said Mean Girls.
Right now, I'm going to go with Dune Part 2.
Currently, I might go with Lisa Frankenstein.
Ooh, interesting.
Also, Madam Web looks interesting. I want to see it. I know it's not going to be amazing. I'm so fucking curious. Love Lies Bleeding with Kristen Stewart. I'm excited for that. Yeah. We got Roadhouse with Gyllenhaal coming out soon.
Monkey Man.
Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. Godzilla X Kong, the new Empire. Speaking of the Monsterverse last episode.
Are you excited for that?
I'm going to watch it.
Okay.
Mickey 17 was supposed to come out this year at some point. We'll find out if it ever does. Oh, this year we're also getting Challengers with Zendaya.
That's true.
And Mike Feist and, yay, Josh O'Connor.
Deadpool 3.
Civil War.
When I was seeing Argyle today, the trailer for it played, and when like the title came up, I was like, this should be called Civil War 2, just to fuck with the audience.
Oh, God. The next American Civil War. Also, Bob Marley One Love. I'm excited to see.
I'm not. It looks like another it looks like another generic music biopic. I can't take these movies seriously anymore after watching Weird Al and Walk Hard. I can't, because they all follow the same tropes.
This one is actually like a much more tragic story, though.
I don't doubt it, but literally in the trailer, when he says, don't worry about a thing to his kids in the car, and he thinks to himself, huh, that could be a song. It's in every music biopic. It's the laziest way of showing the songwriting process. I'm not going to get into a whole tangent about it. I don't like these kinds of movies.
Josh, we're getting two Imaginary Friend movies this year.
I know we're getting the John Krasinski one. What's the other one?
The horror movie called Imaginary by Jeff Wadlow.
Oh, no. That looks bad.
This is mostly the most anticipated, Josh. Come on. We got Arthur the King.
Why would Imaginary be on your most anticipated?
I'm just reading out things and seeing if you vibe with it. We got Arthur the King, the dog movie with Mark Wahlberg.
Sure, it's got a good cast.
What is this dog movie genre that always happens?
I don't know. Dogs.
Dogs. The Fall Guy looks fun.
I'm very excited for The Fall Guy.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes comes out.
Very excited.
This year. Furiosa, a Mad Max saga.
Oh, I'm very excited.
Bad Boys 4. Hitman.
Hitman as in the video game? No, that's the Glenn Powell movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm very excited for that one.
Also, Inside Out 2.
Yep.
The Bike Riders, Deadpool 3, like you said. Borderlands at some point.
I'm conflicted on that one.
Kraven the Hunter.
I'm going with your Mad Web logic on it. I don't know if it's going to be good, but man, am I going to be there day one.
The Beetlejuice sequel, which is now called Beetlejuice Beetlejuice.
Sure.
Joker Fully Ado comes out this year. Oh, God.
That's going to be fascinating.
Venom 3 in November.
Oh, hell yes.
Wicked Part 1 in November.
I just don't get why they're making it a two-parter.
In theory, I don't think they've come from this yet. Mufasa this year comes out, in theory.
I think doing a prequel could be interesting.
Sonic 3?
Yes.
Robert Eggers is Nosferatu?
Yes.
And in theory, which is not going to happen, Beyond the Spider-Verse. Not going to happen this year.
Why you got to play with my emotions like that?
Well, because it's still slated for this year. But
it ain't coming out this year.
No. Josh, so out of the whole list thing, if everything came out, your number one thing for you this year is going to be, what was it? Number one thing.
It's between Dune Part 2 and Furiosa.
I might go with maybe The Fall Guy, because it looks fun.
All right.
But also genuinely Madam Web. I'm so curious. Oh, that is our show, people. Josh, where can people find you online?
I'm at The Places and different names to infuriate Sean. I'm on Twitter at J_Rudy28, Instagram at J_Rudy16, YouTube at Josh Rudolph, and Letterboxd at Nerd4Film28.
You can find me on Twitter at TheTheaterNerd, or on TikTok and Instagram at ThatNerdInTheater. And you can email the show at podgeekspeak@gmail.com, or you can tweet us with hashtag GeekSpeakPod or at GeekSpeakPod on Twitter. Sorry, X now. You also can join our Discord. It is in the description down below of the episodes. Come join the community. Come interact with us. It'll be a jolly good time. And sometime soon, we'll be trying to do a game night on there. So come join for that. Woo.
Woo indeed.
Oh, what a year it was, actually. It's pretty crazy how much stuff got this year. Anything you want to mention that came out last year that you didn't get to say quickly? That you'd like, that was great kind of thing? It didn't fall into necessarily the best category for you, but like you're really glad it came out and you liked it a lot. Like, Hunger Games was really fun.
Yeah, I loved Hunger Games. That was, God damn it, give me one second.
The Creator was pretty fun.
I like the Creator. I think it gets too much shit.
I think it came out the wrong time. But being about AI and stuff.
Yeah, that was just a misfortune. Magic Mike's Last Dance, great movie. Loved it.
Joyride's really fun. Like, D&D is fun.
I thought Fool's Paradise was actually pretty decent.
I'm glad. Hey, Josh, I think it's time we bounce.
It's bouncing time? Do we have yoga balls time to do it?
Every day, baby.
Oh, when do I get my yoga ball?
Tomorrow.
Oh. Okay.
You can end recording here.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.